Welcome back to another edition of the Dead End Sports Podcast. This is a weekly sports podcast. We call it the best couple of hours of your sports week. Thank you for tuning in. I am your host, 12. Again, this is Dead End Sports. If you haven't done so already, make sure that you subscribe to this podcast. You can find the podcast anywhere where podcasts are given away for free. Make sure that you hit us up on YouTube, youtube.com/deadendsports. Hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, the whole nine. There's no reason not to subscribe, not to follow. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. Of course, I will not be podcast alone. Joining me are the homies. First up, my man, Beezy 430. Beezy, what up, though?
What up, though? Y'all can hear me okay?
I'm good. Yeah. Your mic sound nice. Check okay. One.
Yeah, I'm about 7 feet away from my mic, so I ain't know if y'all can hear me all right. But all right, what's going on, y'all? What up?
Chilling.
Another crazy weekend of some sports, man. I know we ready to talk about it and get into it.
No doubt. Also joining us is the homie Ken. Ken, what up, man?
What up?
What's good?
Nothing. Keeping my eye on the weather, of course, because they're, you know, talking about school may be shut down. So that means I might not have to drive all the way into work tomorrow. So.
You don't sound too happy about it.
Call me and be like, "Building's closed tomorrow." I'm just waiting.
Ah, here we go. Yeah, no, I'm cool with it. I finally found the Afalo and Jalika. I don't know how to say his name. Fight.
He was swinging for the fences, wasn't he?
Hold on, I'm about to watch it now.
Oh, I
can't get a good video. Oh, there you go. Well, he had to. I think that
NBA
like,
NBA fight.
It's been a lot of fights in the NBA.
It's been a lot of stuff with the NBA and the refs in particular.
Hey, look, I don't have no issue with it. I love it.
No, I love it, but, you know, it's funny because a lot, you know, in the past, whenever guys would square up, we say, oh, man, they ain't going to fight. They ain't going to do nothing. Nah, I think lately, for the last couple, well, this season, they've been squaring up and throwing blows, man. So. Except James Johnson. No, not James Johnson. James Johnson was about to fight Ibaka, and I guess Ibaka didn't know he was a second-degree black belt. Yeah, so
that stopped real quick.
Yeah, that stopped real quick. Apparently, the guy's an MMA fighter and all kind of stuff, so he's undefeated. So what do you do with that?
Yeah. And he's about, what, 6'10", 6'11", something like that?
Yeah.
So you don't want no smoke.
Nah, yeah, you want to let that one go. That's one where if somebody say, "Hey, man, you punk," you be like, "Yeah, this time."
You do. Like, "Yeah, I'm gonna see you. I'm gonna see you.
I'm gonna see you in the street. Yeah. I'm gonna get my goons because you definitely ain't gonna do nothing."
Nah.
And then of course, last night we had the Chris Paul versus his former team, the Clippers, and Trevor Ariza, and it's kind of sketchy as to what actually happened. But there's the two teams played, and if you're not familiar with the story, the two teams played a lot of, you know, trash talking back and forth between Austin Rivers, who was on the bench, and Blake Griffin and Trevor Ariza. And, you know, so guys, there's a tunnel in between the visitors locker room and the home team locker room. The home team was the Clippers, if I'm not mistaken. And this was ironically was Chris Paul's first game back since being traded from the Clippers. And they said those guys, you know, were making their way to, you know, to almost get into a fight or whatever like that. But cooler has prevailed. I think it's funny. I mean, the NBA is investigating it. I think, you know, because no punches were thrown and nobody saw anything, I think they'll probably get fined. But still funny nonetheless, man. The NBA is kind of wild right now.
Yeah, it is. It is. I expect there would be a memo sent to the NBA teams from Silverman,
Adam Silver, yeah, commissioner
Adam Silver, yeah. About
and you got to figure that it's gonna happen, and the reason being is because, and we talked about it just last week on the podcast. The NBA, as far as popularity right now, is at a very, very they're riding a great wave. Ratings are up 20%. And when you couple that with the fact of the issues that the NFL has had this past season off the field and on the field, you know, it's a good look for the NBA. You know, have they surpassed the NFL in ratings? No. But, you know, if they keep on this upward trend, you know, in a couple of years, well, you never know what can happen. So Adam Silver is about, you know, he's about the league, he's about NBA, he's about money as well. So, you know, he's not going to let anybody mess up that bag for real.
Nope. Not at all.
So and we'll get to a little bit more NBA talk on the back half of the program. Right now, man, hot and heavy. We got to talk about the NFL. Let's talk about the divisional round, man. We had a crazy, crazy weekend this past in the divisional round. In the first game, the Tennessee Titans went, well, it wasn't the first game that happened, but first game we're going to talk about, Tennessee Titans went to New England, got smoked by Tom Brady and the crew. And so I guess let's start right there, man. Just your old, and I'll be the first to admit, I didn't watch one play of this game because I knew this game wasn't going to be about nothing. But I did see the highlights. B, I'll start with you, man. What did you take away from this game, man?
Man, the great coaching of the coaching staff of the Patriots, man, the way they make the adjustments, you know, because at first, you know, like the first maybe first quarter and a half, you know, it seemed like Tennessee was getting their mojo. It seemed like there was like it was a brink of like, uh-oh, can we be in for an upset? Like, because Tennessee, them boys came out playing. They wasn't scared. They was trying to take Patriots block off. And I was like, okay, but – you know, once you got into that middle of the second quarter, and then definitely once you got halftime, once you make the halftime adjustments, it was just a wrap. I saw Ken tweeted a few times about, you know, what the fix is in. Like, the fix is in.
It was in, you know it.
Yeah, he was like, the fix is in. He said them calls, it was like a couple of calls that went right towards the Patriots' way, and it was a wrap after that. Ken was like, oh, that the pass fix is in. So, I don't know if it was – it was two calls. I'm pretty sure King could know specifically which ones they were. But
I thought at first
Tennessee was, you know, they were, oh, okay, Marcus Mariota looking pretty good against the great Tennessee company and stuff. But hey, Patriots show you why they're the Patriots, and I'm gonna give the stage to Ken on that one.
Ken, what's your take on that game, man?
All right, so look, man. We all knew that the odds of the Titans beating the Patriots were zero. Well, I'm just going to get
that high.
I think all of us picked the Patriots.
No, I didn't. I didn't pick the Titans.
He's not picking the Patriots. He ain't going to pick the Patriots tonight.
But, you know, I mean, everybody listening, people that have listened to the show for a while know how I feel, so they understand or understood that pick. Nevertheless, you're absolutely right. They looked like they drove down the field for their first score. I won't say they made it look easy, but they had a good game plan, and they put the Patriots on notice. Now, that's a long game, and we've seen throughout the course of these playoffs that we've seen – big leagues in these games just disappear. This playoff football and you know, you got to play to till the clock hits triple zero, as Stephon Diggs. So, you know, so but what I liked the game plan, I liked what I saw, and then it happened. The Titans were marching down the field. Eric Decker picks up a big third down, converted a big third down. And within 5 yards, they called a pass interference call against him and wiped it out. Then the Patriots had the punt. I mean, the Titans had the punt. Then the Patriots go back down the field. And it was like, okay, well, you know what? That's football. Some calls like that will go against you. That's understandable. You know, throughout the course of the game, sometimes those come back to you. But the one that got me was – the call reversal that gave New England a first down. The score was 14-7. I believe the Titans forced a three and out. Yeah, very key, because after that it was over. They forced a three and out. The Titans were getting the ball back. And, you know, if you're the Titans, they're puppies. So you need as many breaks as possible. You need to be able to get this ball back to possibly go down and score at least a field goal, at best, tie the game. And then all of a sudden, you're like, oh, okay, we could play with these guys. But they called it they called it on the Patriots. Everybody's getting ready to set up for the next play, and they came back and reversed the call and said that the Titans were offside. And then they showed the replay, and you can clearly see the Patriots with the false start. Mm. My mind was blown. I could not believe what just happened. And at that point, I couldn't watch anymore. At that point, the Patriots just marched down the field, went up 21-7, and essentially the game was over. I mean, we all know at that point, there was no way the Titans were going to come back from a 21-7 lead. Something like that happens to you, you're feeling good. It has to demoralize you. It's hard to overcome that. And mm-hmm. and for whatever reason, like, I there was really no clear explanation. Everybody was bewildered. Even Dart Adams. Dart Adams is from Boston. He didn't understand. He'll take it because he's a Patriots fan, but he's from the city. It makes sense. Most diehard Patriot fans are going to take it, but I saw Twitter, and everybody on Twitter was like, what just happened? What happened? I don't understand what happened. And you know what? Like, I said the fits is in. It was clear as day. And it may be not in favor of the Patriots because they didn't need a lot of help. Right. But, you know, Vegas had them projected to win that game by 2 touchdowns, and here go the Titans about to go in and score to, you know, possibly tie the game. They were like, we can't have that happen. Flat. We need to take care of that. And then that's, you know, 35-14 blowout. Those are the things that really just bothers me with that organization. It was upsetting, man. I was like, wow, I just can't believe it. Like, if they just beat them straight up, which they were probably going to do more than likely anyway, fine. But it's not like they needed that. And mm-hmm. I was just disgusted, man. I couldn't watch any more of the game. And I halftime, I was at my father-in-law's house. I got up. I was like, boys, pack up. Get your stuff together.
We got you had up. Seen enough.
And I had seen enough. There was nothing else to watch. And I left and I went home. Then, you know, and that was it. I was done. So, yeah, man, I just, that's what I got from that game. It's just, I don't know what happened or why it happened. All I know is it happened. And
man,
it just,
that's crazy. And you know, it's funny because like the game is, it was weird for me, man, because the game was on. Like I said, I didn't see the game. It was on, but I really wasn't like paying attention. Like I left out of the room, came back in the room, and it was 7-7. I came back and I was like, okay, you know, it's 7-7. Well, you know, what's going on? And then next thing I know, you know, they're making plays. And I'm like, okay, well, this game is, you know, this might be competitive, but I'm still not sitting down and actually watching the game. And, but yeah, stuff like that, it's demoralizing because what happens is that, you know, they actually, when you have those kind of penalties and stuff like that, it takes away from the confidence of a team. So, you know, a team, especially a young team like the Titans, you know, it's demoralizing, like you said. And then when you have fans that see these type of things happening, you're like, the fans are still like bewildered as to what's going on. It's not a good look for the game, man. It's not a good look at all.
No, it isn't, man. And it adds to the narrative that the Patriots probably won't ever shake, that the NFL favors them. And it goes all the way back to the Tuck rule, where there are reports, there are stories out that who was the commissioner at the time, Tagliabue?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that they were looking for a rule to give the Patriots the ball. And they found one. They said that thing went on for like 15 minutes. I remember that game. And I think that Tagliabue and somebody were, I think it was Kraft, were friends. So, you know, ever since that game, the game that basically put Tom Brady on the map.
Yep. I remember that game too.
Man, it broke my heart, man, because I felt like that game was taken away from the Raiders, and it was given to Brady and the Patriots. And I've said it on this show before. When Bill Parcells was there, I was a fan of the Patriots. I like the Patriots. I was a fan of Parcells. I like Parcells as a coach. So I kind of follow him where he went, you know, from his days with the Giants. So I was like, oh, okay, cool. And I was cool with the Patriots. And then, you know, even though they got a new coach, but and then Brady was the quarterback. I think I like Bledsoe a little bit better, but I was cool with it. I think, you know, and then to see that happen just didn't feel right. And ever since that game, and the way they propped Brady up from that moment on, that the Patriots have been they've received a lot of favors from the league.
Of course.
And got away with a lot of stuff.
to put it lightly, they've gotten a lot of favors.
Yeah.
It's interesting, man, because, you know, New England, like you said, and we talked about it before, and I'm not even going to go down the road of Deflategate, but, you know, to have deflated footballs when you clearly didn't, because you smoked the team that you were playing, like, you didn't need it. And, you know, like you said, those calls like that, and I went back and I didn't watch, like you said, I didn't watch the game live, but I went back and watched the clips on NFL.com, which give you basically the whole game clip. So it's like maybe about a 10-minute clip, but it gives you not just the touchdown and scoring plays, but, you know, the plays that lead up to those plays as well. And yeah, that stuff was demoralizing, man. And you could tell that it just took the wind out of the sail of, you know, the Tennessee Titans, who in a weird move ended up firing their coach. You know, just 2 days after that, which was, you know, crazy in and of itself. Mike Mularkey is gone and they are now looking for a new head coach. That came about because the team did not agree on a contract extension. And so Mike Mularkey is up out of the paint. The other game that happened on Saturday, the Atlanta Falcons went to Philadelphia, take a big L and losing 10-15. Philadelphia's defense was crazy. They shut down the high-flying Atlanta Falcons offense. B, man, what's your take on the Falcons Eagles, man? What did you take away from that game?
Man, this was the one I thought the Falcons was going to pull out. You know, with Nick Foles going up against Matt Ryan, I was favoring Matt Ryan, you know, just because the more experienced QB. You know what happened with them last year. So I was kind of putting a little bit of faith in Georgia team, you know. I was, and especially how well their defense looked, you know, last week against the Rams. You know, I was like, okay, they get their offense going, and, you know, they'd be good. Julio Jones stepped up a little bit. So I just thought they was, but, you know, I guess, lo and behold, man, them boys, you know what I thought about? I thought about, like, when, you know, in the season when the Eagles had Carson Wentz, mm-hmm. and how, like, everything was fun and how the team was just rolling. You know what I'm saying? Like, just as a whole. And I think they kind of – I felt like they was like, let's do this for our man Carson Wentz. Let's ball out. Let's not – you know, let's – because they know the NFC going to have to go through Philly, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's at Philly, right? It's
gonna Yeah.
So they know that it's going to have to be at Philly. So – you know, that's the best way. So they like, let's just do this for our main cars. Let's have fun. Remember, they was taking pictures and
doing electric slide
when they was rolling. Yeah. And I think they tried to get that essence back as a team, you know, against the Falcons. And they did. I mean, the defense stepped up big time. And, you know, if the defense looked like what we just saw against the Falcons, I think we're going to be in for a treat for this NFC Championship game coming up next week. This upcoming week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that should be pretty interesting. But, yeah, man, you know, I think, you know, Eagles, them guys, they pulled together, man, and they got behind their QB. Foles, he got that win, you know, got the clutch win. And unfortunately, that, you know, Julio Jones couldn't hang on to that ball on that last clutch pass, man, that mm-hmm. Matt Ryan threw to him to try to seal the game in that touchdown. But, you know, other than that, hey, Eagles, I ain't mad at Eagles, man. Shout out to the folks and Eagles, man, it's going to be a chance for them to get their first. We're now out of the four teams. We have three teams that can possibly be a first-time Super Bowl winners in Jacksonville, mm-hmm. Philadelphia, and Minnesota. So, you know, shout out to some new faces, man. Let's get some new faces in there, some first-time winners.
Definitely. Ken, what about you, man? Your take on the Falcons going up to Philadelphia and coming up short?
Well, I had the Falcons going to the Super Bowl. The Eagles were in their way. this game was theirs for the taking, and Sarkisian, for whatever reason, decided to operate with half of the field on fourth and two and do a rollout with immobile Matt Ryan. Not only that, Kyle, he had the fullback Derek Coleman in the slot. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh my God. I saw that play, man.
Yeah. So it's fourth and two, season on the line. You got a chance to win a very, very tough defensive game. And I don't know, you don't have Devontae Freeman or Tevin Coleman in the game, you know, to at least give you another option. Nope. If anybody should know about squandering opportunities at the goal line, it should be Dan. It's inexcusable, man. I just don't understand.
Now, but you're preaching, though. You're preaching for real.
Hey, like, what are doing? I got to give Philadelphia a lot of props. I didn't watch football this year, so I didn't get a chance to see that. That was my first time watching that defense. That defense is for real. Them boys can play. But the Falcons made the plays they needed to make. I'm talking about fourth and six. Not only do you pick up the 6 yards you needed, you went down the field 20 yards to your guy.
Your guy, and, who was matched up with a safety.
Yes. That's what you want. That's what I wanted. I'm like, if you're going to go down with your gap. Matt Ryan to Julio Jones. If Julio misses it, we live with the results. But I got to give the Eagles a lot of props, man. They listened to the noise. They listened to the naysayers, and they showed up.
Listen, if you've been listening to this podcast for the last couple of years, you know that I'm a Falcons fan. I got a lot to say. I'm going to try to keep it condensed because I don't want to ramble. But, you know, it's like Ken and B both made great points. I think, you know, first and foremost, I got to tip my hat to the Eagles. The Eagles, like you say, and you haven't seen them. You didn't. This is your first time seeing them. I want to say I saw the Eagles earlier this season. I didn't see many of their games, to be honest. But, no, that defense is for real. And this is a team that, you know, with Carson Wentz, I thought could go to the Super Bowl. With Nick Foles, I didn't think they were going to go far. In fact, I had, if you listen to last week's podcast, I picked them to lose this game. That being said, you know, they came out and they did what they had to do. They made the plays that they had to make. Their coaching staff made the adjustments, so you got to tip your hat to them. On the other side of the ball, the Falcons, you know, you can't ask for much more from that defense. I've been telling my friends for the longest that for you to make it to the Super Bowl, and I think last year was an anomaly because defensively the Falcons played well on the back half of the season, but they weren't a top 10, top five defense. To have a legitimate shot to win the Super Bowl, you need to be a top 10, top five defense. That's what this Falcons team is. And it's ironic because the defense now for the Falcons seem to be the stronger side of the ball than their offense. Which is crazy when you think about it, when you think about Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, Devontae Freeman, Tevin Coleman, and all these other guys that they have on the offensive side of the ball. But this, you know, there's two people that I have to throw, well, three people I have to throw the blame at. One is Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan had a decent game, but you're going to need to play better and play more. And, you know, there were a couple of shots that he just didn't get, and you've got to step it up and, you know, take it to the next level. And he just didn't. You know, his numbers came out okay, you know, if you look at his stat line, but, you know, ultimately that last pass, that last play, you know, that's going to come back. And this is the second time in Matt Ryan's career where they've come up short. It was a couple of years ago in the NFC Championship game in Atlanta, ironically, where they lost to a guy by the name of Colin Kaepernick. They came up 10 yards short from going to the Super Bowl. Colin Kaepernick goes to the Super Bowl and the rest is history. And so I blame part of it on Matt Ryan, but most of the blame goes to Steve Sarkisian, the offensive coordinator, like Ken mentioned, and head coach Dan Quinn. You can't call a rollout pass on fourth and two. You just can't. Now, if your quarterback is Michael Vick, yeah, okay, do it. If your quarterback is Marcus Mariota, you can do it. If your quarterback is Cam Newton, you can do it. The problem with calling a rollout pass at that juncture is that, for one, you shrink the field. And for two, in the red zone, you've got bodies going everywhere. The field is condensed, so there's only but so many pass plays that you can get off. I still don't understand, and B, I know you'll appreciate this. When you're a Detroit Lions fan, when the ball got inside the 10, 15-yard line, you know, a couple of years ago when you guys had number 81 out there, everybody in the stadium knew the ball was going to Calvin Johnson. And you trusted the fact that Matt Stafford could throw the ball up and Calvin Johnson could come down with these 50-50 balls. And more often than not, he was going to make the cornerback. I mean, because Calvin Johnson was 6'5", he had like a 40-inch vertical. Julio Jones, 6'3", I mean, he's a physical specimen. Julio Jones and Matt Ryan have only, I think, their red zone targets, they were like 1-for-18 the entire season. And that I still haven't figured out why they can't get him the ball in the red zone, much like, you know, how they did with, you know, a guy like Calvin Johnson. So, you know, I got to blame Dan Quinn. I got to blame Steve Sarkisian. And I tell you what other play, Ken, that was just as bad was the pass. I think it was on second or third down to the third string running back. I mean, so you don't even have Tevin Coleman in the game, and you throw a shovel pass to Ward. Ward hadn't even barely played in the game. And, you know, I also got to blame Dan Quinn for, you know, I think at some point they should have snatched Devontae Freeman out of the game. Devontae Freeman had like 10 carries for like 10 yards. And Tevin Coleman had 10 carries for 70 yards. Tevin Coleman clearly had it going. I don't understand why these coaches, and like you said about Dan Quinn, you know, now I can't blame him for what happened in Seattle, because Pete Carroll, Dan Quinn was the defensive coordinator. So you guys heard me laughing earlier when Ken made the statement. But Dan Quinn was on the defensive side of the ball, so he had nothing to do with Pete Carroll's decision to throw on fourth and handed the ball to beast mode. That being said, you have, throughout the season, there's certain plays that you should have for certain situations. You have more than one play for fourth and two on the goal line. I just don't think that, I mean, if they had turned the ball and handed it off to Devontae Freeman or Tevin Coleman and got stopped, then okay, you say, okay, well, look, we made our best shot. Or if you wanted to throw a fade to Julio, that's fine. You can't run a rollout pass with slow-ass Matt Ryan. I'm sorry. And you condense the field when you know that this guy, Matt Ryan, wasn't going to run the ball in. So, you know, the Falcons blew it. Now, I will say this much. It was announced today that Sarkisian will be back. Many people really did not like Mike Shanahan, who was the Falcons' previous offensive coordinator when he was here in Atlanta.
Kyle Shanahan.
Yes. I'm sorry. What did I say? Mike? Okay. Mike, yeah. Yeah, that's his daddy. Kyle Shanahan. They didn't like him. He struggled in his first year as well. And then obviously his second year was the year where the Falcons had the high flying offense. So maybe one year under Steve Sarkisian, this Falcons offense can get it together, much like they did, because they were trying to run Shanahan out of Atlanta the same way that Sarkisian is being run now. So that's something to look forward to, Falcons fans. I think if this offense gets it together, this team could, and it's not me being a fan, I really think this team can be playing for a Super Bowl in 2019, and the Super Bowl is held right here in the city of Atlanta. They could play right here. You heard it here first.
Would it be crazy if Minnesota make it to Super Bowl? Because, you know, I think Super Bowl is going to be in Minnesota.
It's in Minnesota, man. I would love for that to happen, man. I spent a year living in Minnesota back in 2010, really? Living and working up there. Yeah. And when I tell you these fans, man, I love their fans because they are so passionate. And I think part of the reason why there's an affinity for me for those fans, because they've seen so much and come so close and not been able to get over the hump. And if you look at it geographically, Minneapolis, the Twin Cities, it's only like a couple of hours drive from Wisconsin. So, you know, if you're in Wisconsin, everybody's Green Bay fans. And then you have a lot of people in Minneapolis and in Twin Cities area who are from Chicago. And so you got Bears fans. So, you know, if you think about the last 20, 30 years, just from the team's perspective, Green Bay's had their success. You know, Chicago had their run or whatever like that. Minnesota hasn't. They've had a couple of good years here and there, and they've gotten close, you know, but they're kind of like the little brother to these other big brothers. So their fans, man, one thing I learned just from living up there and working up there, those fans are very passionate and they really, really want to see this team win, man. So I couldn't be happier for that fan base. I really hope that they do it.
Like, that'd be crazy. You win your franchise Super Bowl, your first franchise Super Bowl in your stadium.
Well, now this won't be their first franchise because they've been to four other Super Bowls. It was in the 70s, so we were little kids. You know what I'm saying?
They won a Super Bowl since the Super Bowl era.
No. They've been to four they're on four. They've never won a Super Bowl in their franchise, but they went four times, I think, in the 70s, and they never could get over the hump.
Oh, that's what I mean. Like, that's what I was saying. I'm not first time. I mean, like first time.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah. And the closest that they got after that was in 97, 98, when they went 15. This was Randy Moss's first year in the league when they went 15-1. They had Randall Cunningham, Robert Smith, Chris Carter. High flying 15-1, and then they get to the NFC Championship game, lost to the Falcons. Yeah. The Falcons go to the Super Bowl, Minnesota, you know, loses or what have. So they've experienced heartbreaking. We're going to talk about that game in just a second. But so we flip it back and let's take it to Pittsburgh. A crazy shootout. If someone had told you that the Pittsburgh Steelers would put up 42 points and still lose the game, I would have probably told you crazy. Ken, what did you take away from that Pittsburgh Jacksonville game?
I feel bad for the brother, Tomlin. he's going to catch it. I made the mistake of clicking on the hashtag after the I don't know. I knew what people were going to say about him with that onside kick. I don't agree with the call. I think that was a bad call. But I'm not a coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm just a guy talking in a microphone and I type on Twitter. So I don't have to make those calls and be heavily criticized for it. And Tomlin is a man's man, and he's going to make his calls. He's going to stick behind it. He don't care what you think. But I felt bad for the brother because I don't think he was given a fair shot at winning that game. I'm going to say something that not a lot of people are saying in the sports media. Tomlin is the one that kept them in that game. Tomlin, outside of that one call, I feel is the one that kept them within a shot of winning that game. The reason why I say this is because Big Ben, again, threw them in a deficit. Two of his turnovers led to 14 points by the Jacksonville Jaguars. The fumble, which was a scoop and score.
Mm-hmm.
You take away that, they're going to win this game. Possibly. We don't know. But it helps. He threw an interception to Miles Jack. Great play by Miles Jack. You got to give him props for making a hell of a play, tiptoeing on the sideline to pick that ball off, put him in the red zone. They don't have to drive the field, and you don't get a chance for Labortles. You know, I call him Labortles because he you don't give a chance for Labortles to make a mistake.
Labortles.
Yeah. And I'll get to him in this. No, I'll just go ahead and say it. I think he did what he needed to do in that game to give the Jacksonville Jaguars a chance to win. And he came out the victor in spite of what people have said about him, especially going into the game. But, you know, you're in a 21-7 hole. You're in a 28-7 hole again, but that team – fought and fought and fought, and they did not quit. They did not quit because Tomlin is not a quitter. And he made a call that probably cost him the game. Well, you can say it cost him the game because he gave him the field goal. But to me, that loss is on Big Ben. Big Ben gave them 14 points. Big Ben gave them 14 because of Big Ben made the score 14-7. He had a hell of a game. Over 400 yards passing. Five touchdowns, but mainly because he had to, you know, and he made some really, really clutch throws. Elbel, great catch. on I think it was fourth and whatever. Antonio Brown, great catch again down the sideline. Mm-hmm. Great throw by Big Ben. I think that was another big play in the game. But he put them in that hole, and he put them in a situation that made it tough for a defense without Ryan Shazier to come back from, a team that wanted to play them. For me, man, I know a lot of people are going to talk about the talking and looking ahead and all of that other stuff. I feel like football needs more of that. I feel like football is too PC. So I'm a fan of them talking crap because it makes the game fun. It gives us stuff to talk about before and after the game because it plays out on the field. It's disappointing, man. And I hate to see that it went down like that, but I am really, really interested in what and seeing what this team does in the offseason because I think there are some changes that need to be made, and I'm curious to see if Tomlin is going to make them after the season. But you can't be a bad coach and go 13-3. I'm sorry.
There it is. There it is. B, what about you, man? What did you take away from Pittsburgh, Jacksonville?
Man, Jacksonville defense, for real. Sassy Ramsey.
Is it B? Is it? They gave up 42 points, man.
Hey, man.
But they gave up 42.
That's a high fly. Offense, man, it's a high flying offense. But look, Sassy Ramsey, I'm rooting for him. I'm rooting for Jacksonville. You know, I think Jacksonville. Look, they got a good running game. If Blake Bortles can get his Trent Dilfer on and just manage the game, I think Jacksonville would be all right, man. But I thought the game itself. I thought it was. I didn't. Yeah, like Ken. Yeah, I didn't expect, you know, Pittsburgh to score 42 points against that Jacksonville defense that's been so highly praised. I mean, we know that Pittsburgh is a high offense, you know, high power offense. But still, if you a defense, a shut down defense like that, no team shouldn't score 42 points on you. That's just unacceptable. But you got the win, so that's the most important thing. But yeah, I thought it was an entertaining game. I thought Antonio Brown made plays when they mattered the most. Le'Veon Bell made some good great plays as well. I mean, I thought the players. I agree with Ken. I completely agree with Ken. I think the coaches, you know, it falls on some of the coordinators. You know what I'm saying? I think the coordinators could have, you know, managed this better. But for Big Ben, you got to call that QB sneak. You got to. Dude is huge. It should have been plenty of times you could have called a QB sneak to get those first downs, man. But, yeah, I think, hey, look, I like it. I mean, I thought it was a very entertaining game. I hope we get that same in the SEC game. And you know, Ramsey already talking about some, and we're going to win that bit. You know, we're going to win that game, and we're going to win that. All right, Ramsey. All right, I see you. So, yeah, man. Hey, I'm looking forward to it. I think this is going to be very entertaining. Unfortunately, I, just like Ken, I was rooting for the brother. I was hoping Tomlin would get the W and do have that, you know, that the Patriots and the Steelers game that I think a lot of us have been predicting since early December, mid-December.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is unfortunate, but you know what? Look, like I said before, new faces. You got Jacksonville in here, got a chance to play in the Super Bowl and get their first Super Bowl if they can get past the Patriots. It's going to be hard going up to Gillette Stadium, but it's going to be fun. But, yeah, I feel, you know, I like Antonio Brown. I like Le'Veon Bell. Like, to me, I think them two guys are, like, the best at their position right now.
Oh, no question.
You know, the best running back, Le'Veon Bell. He's all he can do it all. And the best wide receiver is Antonio Brown. And I hope we know how much of 100% that Antonio Brown was. Was he like 100%, 100%, or was he like 85%, 90%? We don't know. But he looked good out there playing, man. He was making some plays. And I love Ramsey for you know, having the guts to go out there and guard him a lot. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, it's just unfortunate that, you know, Steelers, the brother lost, and like I think you mentioned, Kyle, he's gonna be on the hot seat, man. I hate that.
Yeah, we'll come back to that in just a second. Man, you guys made some great points. I think now I will disagree with Ken. I think some of this is on Ben Roethlisberger, and the reason why I say that is because I say some of it's on Ben. I won't put it all on Ben. I'm looking at the stats, Ken. Ben threw 37 for 58 for 469 yards. So, you know, it's only but and five touchdowns. So it's only but so much blame I could give to a guy who throws for nearly 500 yards in a playoff game and five touchdowns. But the interception and the fumble subsequently led to 14 points. Keep in mind, Jacksonville jumped out on them 14 to nothing.
Right.
And if I'm not mistaken, it might have been 21-7 before the, you know, the Steelers got rolling. So I understand and agree with you on Tomlin, you know, keeping the team focused and, you know, giving them the opportunity to fight back. And they did fight back. And like I said, the score was, you know, 45-42, but it really wasn't that close. I mean, Pittsburgh scored on the last play of the game. But I think ultimately what did them in was obviously the lack of defense. I'm looking at the stats here, and Le'Veon Bell has, B just mentioned, he's the best back in the game. He's only got 16 carries for 67 yards. Now, I know part of that was because they were behind, but still, you still have to kind of make some type of commitment to the run. Now, they did keep him involved because he did finish with 9 catches for 88 yards. So, you know, he spread the ball around, but conversely, to me, this game was about Jacksonville. Jacksonville came in very confident. They heard all of the rumblings. They heard guys like Mike Miller, or I think that was his name, the safety for Pittsburgh, Mike Mitchell, I'm sorry, who was allegedly standing outside of their locker room saying, yelling, "You're going to remember my name. You're going to remember my name." Yeah, they remembered your name because they kicked your ass. You know, this game was about Jacksonville, man. Blake Bortles is trash. I'm not going to sit here and try to make it sound like he's anything but what he is. But that being said, he and I tweeted this on Sunday. He's out here on his Trent Dilfer, and he did a Trent Dilfer, the best Trent Dilfer impression that I've seen in a while. He managed the game. He made like four or five throws that he had to make, and he didn't turn the ball over. And you know, they started him off. He was just little dump passes. I think the first two or three plays that they ran were, you know, just little dump off screen plays or what have you. You know, something to get him going. Fournette, I mean, Ken and B have been singing his guy's praises since he was at LSU. Ain't nothing changed. This dude is a monster. And like Ken said, if he doesn't go out with a sprained ankle, I think it personally could have gotten worse for the Steelers. The Steelers kind of made their run when Fournette was out of the game. But that dude is a beast, man. If he stays healthy, the sky's the limit. He is easily going to be, you know, for you fantasy, if you haven't picked him up in fantasy this year, trust me, he's going to be coming off the boards for a lot of fantasy cats come next year early. But, I mean, I'm looking at the stats. Their leading receiver was T.J. Yeldon with 3 catches for 57 yards. Bortles spread the ball around, man. He threw to like 9 different receivers. So they don't even have guys that I think that you could say, okay, well, you come into the game and say, hey, we got to stop. You know, you know that you have to stop an Antonio Brown. You know you got to try to stop a Le'Veon Bell. But Jacksonville doesn't have that. They just got a bunch of guys, man. And guys were making plays, and they just kept coming and kept coming. And they weren't afraid to stand toe-to-toe with the Steelers. And I think, you know, the Steelers talking a lot of trash, you know, and they were, you know, openly talking about making it back to the AFC Championship game to play against New England. And do I think they overlooked Jacksonville? No, but I don't think that they gave Jacksonville the respect that they should have, especially when you consider that Jacksonville came into Pittsburgh earlier this season and put the beat down on them 30-9. I think that was the score. So with that being said, man, this game, it was about Jacksonville and what Jacksonville had to do. And they really, they just took it to them, man. They straight up and down took it to them. You got to, you know, give your props to this team. This team, you know, they after Ben, they sacked them, I think, 7 times. They forced fumbles. They forced, you know, turnovers. And this defense is, and one of my buddies that texted me during the game, he was like, man, is this Jackson's defense for real? I said, hell yeah, they're for real. This team, you know, the weak link is clearly the quarterback. And if he can play halfway decent like how he played on Sunday, they've got as good a chance to beat anybody in this league. That was a great game.
Yeah, it was. And I just want to say this. Look, all year long, people have ignored Jacksonville,
mm-hmm.
except this show.
This is true.
And And we pointed out that Fournette has changed this team, and people are sleeping on them, and people need to pay more attention. But because they were Jacksonville, people just and Blake Bortles, people didn't give them props. Let's not forget that when Coughlin was in Jacksonville, when they first came into the league, I believe they went to the NFL playoffs 8 years straight when he was there. So for all you newbies, understand something. This is just them getting back to the way they were. And I think when he left, this organization just couldn't get back on track. But he's back now, and he's the GM, and you can already see his impact, and it's being felt. And it's just being felt by some of the players that I think he had a say-so in, and that's Fournette, and that's the corners, Bouye, and here they are.
People have been sleeping on this team, man, and this team is for real. You know, people, it's easy to look at the quarterback and dismiss this team, but this team is way, way much better than what you think that they – and then conversely, man, the last game of the day with the craziest ending, and we're going to talk about the ending, the miracle in Minnesota in just a second, but – outside of that, just give me your overall take on that game, man. What did you take away from that game?
I mean, I literally watched like the last maybe 60 seconds of that game.
Oh, wow. Are
from you the serious? Time that, wow. You remember I kept texting y'all like.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, you were.
Remember I was like, texting. Man, so I'm looking at the score. I'm like, Minnesota defense is really that for real? Like, you know, it was something 17 to zip. So I'm like, man, Minnesota defense must be really scrappy. And, you know, he was like, yeah, yes. It was like maybe, yeah, like right before minute when Saints kicked that field goal to win up, that's when I watched the game. And I watched it from there. And I was like, I'm thinking like, wow, we about to have Saints about to get into about to be in the NFC Championship game. Shout out to Drew Brees or whatever. And then, next thing you know, I didn't think Case Keenum was going to do this. The miracle in Minnesota happened, and I was like, wow. Like, that was crazy. I caught that last thing. Because when he caught it, I'm thinking like, okay, yeah, he about to probably go out of bounds. He about to try to kick a field goal at the last minute, a 50-plus yarder field goal to try to, win the game, ice the game, whatever. Nope. Was I wrong? I feel so bad for my man Williams, man. I feel so bad for him. For him to miss that tackle. Like Ken said, he tried to do it. He tried to hit the hit stick on Madden and missed. So, you know, and that's what he did. All he really had to do was just tackle him, try his best to keep him in bounds, and the game would have been over. But that was crazy. That was like a crazy end. I mean, I, off the top of my head, I can't think of a crazier ending. The first one that jumps out to me is the Eddie George, the Tennessee Titans and Ravens, when whatchamacallit stole the ball from Eddie George. Oh man, you gotta know what I'm talking about, Kyle.
Yeah, yeah, it might have been the AFC championship game, or was it?
Yeah, it was like
the division.
He threw the pass to Eddie George.
Eddie George and Ray Lewis took it from him.
Yeah, and like that was like the finish. Like that was it. So like that's the first crazy finish that jumped out the top of my head that I can remember. But yeah, man, it's one of the craziest finishes that's gonna go down in it. NFL postseason in a long time. So yeah, unless we get something crazier this upcoming weekend, but yeah, that was nuts, man. It was a lot of drama. I mean, I like how Diggs had his nigga moment, you know what I'm saying, like looking at the camera, you know, took off his helmet, threw his helmet just with his arms out. I'm like, oh yeah, I see you out there with your nigga moment, baby. That was cool. That was the cool part of it right there. But yeah, a lot of emotion. It was crazy to happen in Minnesota's, you know, home field. So yeah, it was nuts, man. It was crazy. It was. I'm glad I caught the last 50 seconds of that game.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. Ken, what did you take away from the game?
Man, Drew Brees lit Minnesota up in the second half because they were all in his behind in the first half. I mean, he couldn't do anything, but that second half, man, they couldn't stop him. And he and Michael Thomas started to go to work. There were a couple of players on Minnesota that got hurt. So obviously you had some second stringers in, and that impacted some of the plays. And then, of course, Case Keenum, remember he was Case Keenum, and threw a terrible, terrible interception.
Oh my gosh!
That gave the Saints 14
and
points.
You know who he threw the interception to?
Williams,
Marcus Williams. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. I'm with B. I feel bad for the brother, but it reminded me of Raheem Morris, I think, from the Baltimore Denver game. The one that Flacco made all his money off of.
Oh, when Flacco threw the ball.
Yeah. That was the one. Yeah, yeah. He made that play. Flacco never becomes the guy that we know him as today. But either way, it was a game that was on that I wasn't really – I mean, I had it on. I was here doing some work, and I was watching it, and you kind of felt that, you know that the Saints at some point was going to figure it out. And Sean Payton, to his credit, he did a great job coaching, man, and he kind of changed things up. And he got Minnesota on their heels. And, you know, they started to press a little bit because I think they could feel momentum shifting. You know, watching that, I was really when they came back, I was – when, you know, they hit the field goal, I was like, oh, man, that's way too much time for Breeze.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we'll get into it later. And I essentially thought the game was over too. But I gotta give Breeze props. I hate to see the brother go out that way. I don't know if I want to call him a brother because he has some things to say about the national anthem protest. So I hate to see him go out like that. But I gotta say, Kyle, man, I'm a fan of Kamara, man. I haven't seen him play at all. I've just seen the fantasy scores, and man, that brother is for real. Kyle, tell the people what you text us about Alvin Kamara when he got signed.
Alvin Kamara is, and a lot of people don't know this, but I mean he's from here in Metro Atlanta, but he is childhood and best friends of Quavo, Takeoff, and Offset. Are those the three guys, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Very good, okay. Kyle. You know, I don't know them. I don't know them dudes, man. if you don't know, those are the Migos, not the Amigos, but the Migos, as my dad called them, the Amigos. so yeah, so he grew up with those guys, and like he's their, you know, they're all best friends. And his uncle, if you're familiar with the music industry, his uncle is Coach K. And so this guy is a guy who. I can't remember what high school he went to here in Metro Atlanta, but
I think it was he ends up going. Cross.
Yeah, Norcross. Yeah, that's exactly right. He went to Norcross High, and then he went to Alabama. And if I'm not mistaken, when he got to Alabama, I mean, like all of the running backs that are at Alabama now were there. So he just didn't work out there. He ended up going. I think he went to JUCO for a year and then transferred to University of Tennessee. Balled out at Tennessee, didn't like Butch Jones, what else is new? And, you know, here he is now, and he's probably going to be named the Rookie of the Year. This kid, like you said, Ken, you didn't get a chance to see him, but, I mean, a monster. He has a chance to take the game over and basically take it to the house every single time he touches the ball. He did it this year. Running the ball, receiving. He ran back a kickoff, I think, toward the end of the season against Tampa Bay. He's real deal, for real, for real.
And I became a fan when I found out and excuse me, guys, but this is a black show, so pardon the expression, but for all of you listening. But I became a fan of Kamara when I found out he was a real nigga. When Kyle told me that this dude took his check and went and bought some wings.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah. They asked him what he did with his money. He said he took his check and went and bought some wings. He was like, he wasn't going to spend his money on a whole bunch of jewelry. He wasn't going to spend his money on a whole bunch of clothes. He just went and bought some wings.
Man, I was like, you know what? That's my dude, man. And you felt his impact in that game. You felt his impact in the second half. And I didn't know about the Alabama thing until I started doing more research on him after you told us about the Migos thing. And I was like, oh, so this guy has NFL talent. If you went to Alabama, you can get on the field.
Oh, no question.
You know, you got NFL talent. So, I was familiar with him. But salute to that brother. I'm looking forward to seeing the rest of his career play out in the NFL. And man, we just had the Minnesota-New Orleans game capped off an eventful weekend of NFL playoff football outside of the Titans-Patriots game.
No question. I think the only thing I'll add to that, man, you got to give, you know, Sean Payton and Drew Brees a lot of credit because, man, Minnesota jumped out on them 17-0, and it looked like it wasn't going to happen. And then, like you said, Case Keenum kind of started looking funny in the light. You know, he started looking like Case Keenum. And, you know, I think that's something that Minnesota obviously has to touch up on this coming week because, you know, down the stretch, they didn't play well. And, I mean, you can only, you know, they stopped moving the ball. They stopped doing what they needed to do. They stopped giving the ball to Bryant. And so, you know, it was a situation where Case Keenum was forced to make plays. And the Saints have a good defense. They're led by, you know, the Williams kid who infamously became the GOAT. Lattimore on the corner, and you know, they're good up front with Cameron Jordan. So, you know, tip your hats to the Saints. Man, I don't like the Saints. I never liked the Saints. I hate the Saints. But I will say this much. They came to play, and they did not give up in that game. And you just knew when the Vikings come down the field and kick the field goal, they kick the field goal, they leave a minute something, you know, left on the clock. You know that's a ton of time for Drew Brees. Drew Brees marches down the field, scores. I mean, excuse me, they kick a field goal. And, you know, the Vikings get the ball back. One timeout left. You know, 25 seconds left, and they've got to get in field goal range. And then this happened.
Keenum's going to try to work the ball on the boundary. Keenum steps into it. Passes.
There it is. I mean, crazy, crazy, crazy play. This guy drops back, man. Case Keenum drops back. He throws it to Stephon Diggs. Obviously, Marcus Williams comes up, does not make the tackle, whiffs on the tackle, if you will. Stephon Diggs goes 61 yards for the walk-off touchdown in dramatic fashion. B, you said you caught the end of the game. I mean, to be honest, there was, I want to say, 4 lead changes in the fourth quarter alone. So that play, man, take us through it, man. What's your thoughts on that?
You know, like I said, I thought the game was over. Like, I mean, you know, I just thought at this point, you know, Minnesota was just like on this Hail Mary-ish type stuff. Just like, hey, we're going to try to get what we can. We're going to try to get a field goal because the game was, it was a 1-point game. So, you know, I'm looking at, like, Minnesota going to try to get a field goal so they can, you know, win this thing at the least. You know, I didn't think it was going to be a touchdown. So, you know, Case Keenum drew back. He threw the ball. I'm like, okay, all right. He caught the ball. Oh, my God. And then, like, when my man missed the tackle and I didn't see nobody else behind him and he was running clear and the announcer started going crazy, I was like, wow, I was at the house at that time. I was like, wow. I literally said wow just like that as I was watching. Like, wow. Like, that's crazy. I couldn't believe that fool was he. And then they showed the history play. They showed Williams literally, and quote Ken, did the Madden hit stick and missed. And I was like, what was he thinking? I said, dude, he had one job and one job to do. And that's just let him come down that ball and just be right there to put him down. Be right there to take him down. And let the clock run because they didn't have no more timeouts and you didn't want to get him out of bounds. So all you had to do is hurt him, just put him down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know if the young brother was just thinking too much or just, oh, man, I just feel so bad for him. But, yeah, watching that live, it was just kind of like, damn, I can't believe this is really, like, happening. Like, Minnesota won. Like, I literally was getting ready to pencil in Saints versus Philly, you know, for the NFC championship game. And
you did. You sent us a text.
Yeah, I did. I really did. I thought it was over. I thought it was really over. So when I saw that, I was just like, wow. Like, I just couldn't believe it, man. It was crazy. Like, I love when you catch live moments like that. You know, when you're watching sports in general, whether it's, you know, baseball, walk-off homer, basketball, or football like that. It's just like, damn. So Yeah, man, it was cool. It was dope. I'm glad I caught that. Like, it was really cool. I didn't think Case Keenum had it in him because, like Ken said, you know, he looked like he did some bonehead throws where it was like, okay, this the Case Keenum we know. Like, this the guy that can make some bonehead plays, you know, when it counts. But, hey, he stepped up. Diggs made a heck of a catch, jumped up, both arms up. I mean, he reached up for that ball.
Mm-hmm.
He got it, man. So, hey. Kudos to Minnesota. The miracle of Minnesota, man. A crazy, crazy finish.
True indeed. True indeed. Ken, what about you, man? Walk us through your thoughts on that play, man.
Man. Number one, I felt really, really bad for Minnesota. That's what was going through my head. Because, you know, there's been this growing talk about them possibly playing in the Super Bowl in Minnesota. And again, here we are with them suffering heartbreak. We remember the missed field goal with Seattle. Remember the missed field goal back when they played Atlanta, I think.
Mm-hmm. Like,
this team has just suffered, you know, over time. And, you know, here we go again. And the story somehow rewrote itself to an ending that, even if I know they want more, I know they want more in Minnesota. But even if it ends next week, what happened in that game will live with them for a lifetime because it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. You know, they're saying that this is the first walk-off touchdown in NFL history. And it happened last weekend, and the fans got a chance to see it. Again, I thought Case Keenum, honestly, I mean, now we can go through it. It looked like Case Keenum was intentionally threw the ball. I thought he closed his eyes and threw the ball and just wished for the best. The way he lofted that ball up. That's what it looked like. It looked like the interception he threw. But apparently,
the interception was so terrible, too.
Yeah. It looked just like that. So when Diz caught it, I was like, oh, snap, he caught it. And I looked at the clock, and it was like 2 seconds, but it was enough time for him to get out of bounds. He was right
mm-hmm.
at the sideline.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I've noticed in the playoffs this weekend is that they're going to stop that clock with 1 second left.
Oh, no question.
New England got one. Yeah, Philly got one.
Hey, especially like, if you're at home in Minnesota. Oh, you know, yeah. If that were the Saints, no, they're not stopping the clock.
Nah, if that was the Saints, they'll let it run an extra second or two. But that's why you have home field advantage. And that happened twice this weekend. So they would have got a chance to kick it. Now, would he have made it? We don't know. But at least they would have gotten a shot. But when he caught that ball and put his hand down, turned around and started running, my first reaction was, what are you doing? Get out of bounds. And then, like B said, you hear the announcers yelling, and I'm like, oh, snap, there's nobody there. And this dude went in, and I was like, and I tweeted, I was like, did that just happen or something along those lines?
Yeah.
I just couldn't believe it. It was incredible, man. I'm glad I got a chance to witness it, you know, live. And what a great game. And I honestly, while I was happy for the Vikings, I felt so bad for the Saints. But somebody had to come out a loser of that game. And the last thing, it just pretty much sealed it that Brady will end up facing Nick Foles or Case Keenum in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I know, like, right?
What kind of shit is that?
Yeah. Hey, Ken, that was the downside to Sunday. I was like, damn, the two teams that I thought they had a legitimate chance at beating New England in Pittsburgh or the Saints both got knocked out. So and I can throw the Falcons in there, too. I thought they probably had a legitimate shot at beating the Patriots. But, you know, we can hope and pray. This play, man, was so crazy because I want to say two plays prior to that, they did like an overhead shot of the field. And I'm watching the game with my two sons. Well, my middle son and my youngest son, older son is off to college. So and I tell my middle son Cameron, he's 16. I said, what did I tell him? I said, well, if you see how they're, he said, well, Dad, why are they standing like, because you could see from the overhead alignment that the corner and the nickelback were almost on the standing on the sidelines, almost for the Saints. And I said, well, what they're doing is they're guarding against the sidelines. So because at this point, I think they were down to like maybe 15 seconds or something like that. I said, they know that the Vikings can't throw the ball in the middle of the field, because at that point, you really can't throw the ball in the middle field, get tackled, and then come up and spike the ball. You're probably going to run out of time, right? So when they got down to 10 seconds, which was what was left after that last incompletion, you know, I was telling him, I said, well, and right before they broke the huddle, I said, well, what he's going to try to do is he's either going to go left or right. I said, the only pass that he can throw is a post corner. And he said, well, why you throw a post corner? I said, because if a post corner is thrown correctly, it's going to lead the receiver out of bounds. I said, and that's his best bet to go maybe 20, 25 yards, get out of bounds, and then give your kicker a chance to kick a field goal. And so that's exactly what they run. So if you see the over, if you watch the clip again, if you see the overhead shot, one guy runs a short post corner and Diggs runs a deep post corner. The deep post corner, so where he catches the ball, he catches it between the corner and the safety in a 2D. They were in some type of cover two shell, what we used to call cover two shell. And so he catches it where it's supposed to be caught. It's a great thrown ball, great route. The problem is that when Williams is coming up, all he has to do is make, like B said, make the tackle. He doesn't have to knock him down. If he pushes him out of bounds, then he gives, I think Diggs probably goes out of bounds at the 32. So you're talking about what, a 50-yard field goal, which is makeable in the dome. And I think that kicker, you know, he can hit from 55, 56 yards. So, you know, no, you still don't know. But if Williams pushes him out of bounds, or, you know, let's say Diggs to catch and goes out of bounds, his momentum carries him out of bounds, then Williams isn't the GOAT. You know what I'm saying? But because he comes up, and I think he came up so fast, he was like, okay, I'm just going to cut him. And he went to hit him low, and he just dropped his head. And I think that's part of the problem with a lot of defensive backs, not only in the NFL, but in college as well, is that instead of this every Sunday, right? Instead of trying to make the tackle, they try to blow the guy up. And he goes to hit him, and not only does he whiff, you know, he doesn't even, and then he takes out the other corner that's over there. So once Diggs makes the catch, he's like, oh, snap, let me put my hand down. I put my hand down, and now it's nothing but green grass, and all the Saints see is ass and elbows because Diggs is on his way to the end zone. And so I've been watching NFL, man, since 1976. I've never seen anything like that. And I think I felt good for the fans. I mean, obviously, I don't have anything vested in it other than the fact that I hate the Saints. I think for us fans, we've been through a lot as far as fans of football, fans of the NFL. We've been through a lot this year as far as what we saw and all of the other stuff that didn't have anything to do with football and everything like that. And I think we really got treated to, you know, three really, really good games. Like Ken said, the Patriots game really wasn't that much fun to watch. But I think we should be happy that we got a chance to see that. And even if it ends this coming weekend for Minnesota, I think, you know, those fans got a chance to see something that, trust me, I don't think you'll ever see that again. Not in that fashion, because, you know, statistically, they probably had like a 3% chance of winning that game. And Stephon Diggs, you know, makes a great play. You know, Case Keenum makes a great throw. You know, Williams, you know, for the Saints, he's going to have to live with that. And, you know, unfortunately, that's going to carry with him until, you know, maybe he gets the opportunity to redeem himself. But all he has to do is make the tackle. If he comes up and catches Diggs and grabs him and throws him and keeps him in bounds, the ball game's over. You know, it's just a 25-yard completion and game's over. And, you know, but he doesn't, and the rest is history. So, you know, the miracle in Minneapolis was miracle Minnesota was something special to see. Now, we touched on it a little earlier, and I know Ken, if you want to give more on it, me and B will weigh in real quick. Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin obviously is on the hot seat. We heard earlier today that there are some minority owners for the Steelers who are lobbying to get Mike Tomlin fired. As many of you know, Mike Tomlin is, I want to say, the third head coach in Steeler history. This team has been around all of these years, and they've never had, they've only had three head coaches, Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, and now Mike Tomlin. And like you guys know, we're pro brother over here. So, you know, we don't want to see the brother get fired. But, you know, Mike Tomlin made some very questionable calls in that game. The decision to go, both he and the offensive coordinator, Todd Haley, toss sweep on fourth down. They went for it on fourth down again, I think, throwing against Sassy Ramsey, and he broke up the pass. And then obviously the decision being down by seven with 2 minutes and 18 seconds left, kicking off to Jacksonville with two timeouts left. So you got two timeouts, you got the 2 minute warning, and all you need is one defensive stop. And instead of doing that, Mike Tomlin decides to kick an onside kick. They don't recover it. And Jacksonville Jaguars get the ball back, kick a field goal. Now they're up 10 as opposed to 7. In essence, basically losing the ball game. So obviously, like I said, he's on the hot seat. So B, do you think he should be on the hot seat for this? Why or why not?
No, he shouldn't be on the hot seat. I don't think he should be on the hot seat because the man won. He got them a Super Bowl. He has a great winning record. So, I mean, at that point, we've seen, Texas earlier, John Gruden, look what he's about to get handed to by the Raiders. Yeah. And you're talking about, you know, someone like Tomlin getting a boot. I mean, that dude record, what's his overall record? Ken, you know his overall record? It's like way over 500. Yeah, Tomlin.
116-60. Eight playoff appearances. 2008.
Two Super Bowl appearances, going 1-1 in the Super Bowl. That's hard. A lot of people don't realize how, for him to have eight playoff appearances in the NFL, that is tough. It's tough to make the playoffs. There's teams that goes on droughts of not making playoffs. And this guy has been consistent with this team year in and year out. Like I said, with a Super Bowl win and another Super Bowl appearance. What more can you add? I mean, but you know, like this dude his resume is good. I think you should still, it shouldn't be on the hot seat. It's crazy that this man's job is in jeopardy, or it seemed like it's about to be in jeopardy going heading into this offseason. I think it shouldn't. I think Tom is a great coach. He seemed like he's a player's coach, you know, like kind of like a new school type of coach, like with like old school values, I guess, if that makes sense. No question. It's like a mixture of both with Tomlin, man. Like he get these young guys, man. The young guys that's coming in, the younger guys that's coming in. I think he gets them. So yeah, man. Keep Tomlin. Tomlin stays the Pittsburgh Steelers coach. I hope he does, man. I'd be really, really disappointed in that organization if they let Tomlin go, just by the pressures of social media and everyone else, and you know, just all the outside people talking about what's inside the organization, man. I hope they don't let him go because of that.
True indeed. Joe right now is the homie, man. Our boy FIFO. FIFO, what up, man?
Yo, what it do?
Chilling. What's your take? We were just talking, man, about Mike Tomlin. Obviously, you know, some of the questionable calls that were made this past Sunday. There's been a growing sentiment that, you know, at least from fans, that, you know, Pittsburgh tends to play down to their level of competition. We've seen them struggle in games against, you know, lesser competition, but you know, and then, you know, he caught a little flack also for, you know, talking a couple of weeks ago about, you know, the possible rematch with the Patriots in the AFC Championship game and, you know, having Jacksonville in front of them. And there's a sentiment growing that, you know, maybe he and his players looked Jacksonville, even though I don't believe that. But nonetheless, you know, some questionable calls this past Sunday. So there is a report about some minority owners who will lobby to the Steelers majority owner to fire Mike Tomlin. Do you think that he should be on the hot seat for this?
Okay, so we have to be able to articulate what the hot seat means. Like, should we question Tomlin right now?
Well, I think it's a little bit more than that. I mean, like, these minority owners really want him out of. They're lobbying for him to be fired, period.
Well, no, of course. But that's not the question. The question mm-hmm. is what we think. Okay. Right? So based off of his decision making at the end of or during throughout the Jacksonville game, right? And also some of the inconsistencies you already mentioned, playing down to the level of competition, some of these things that we're starting to see, I think that it's fair to question his tenure or start to question his tenure. I think it's fair to put him under the microscope now, moving forward. Now, obviously, I believe coaches deserve, especially when you've been as good as Tomlin, you know, you've built up that equity. I always talk about equity. You mm-hmm. built up that equity, but he's had some missteps. So now you definitely have to, you know, question. And we'll see how he moves forward. If he recovers and, you know, he doesn't have any more issues, or, you know, Pittsburgh is able to be a little bit more consistent. But it's going to be interesting because the age of Ben, you know, what's the future of the Steelers? We don't know. But if he can guide the ship and do it as consistently as he's been doing, then he's going to be a very tenured coach. He's going to be 15, 18 years. But at the end of the day, you know, they had an opportunity this year. And that's the reason why I think some people are probably calling for his head, which is somewhat understandable.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, he's Tomlin. And I think he's earned more equity than just having, you know, a bad season or a bad game called. Like, he took risks. He took risks. Jacksonville dominated that whole first quarter.
They did.
Took risks. You know, so at the end of the day, you know, I'd rather have a coach coming out swinging and making every bad call than just, you know, playing it safe. So, you know, like, how do we want it? Do we want the safe coach or we want the guy that's going to take risks? Right? So, for me, I'd rather have Tomlin. But at the same time, you got to be like, hey, bro, hey, we can't lose to Jacksonville the way we lost.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Not saying that, hey, you know, I need you to win another Super Bowl. Hey, that's a tall order. He's been in the playoffs 8 years in a row. He continuously puts Pittsburgh in positions to win. If you took a misstep because the first quarter got out of control, hey, I think we have to understand what it is.
True.
So,
indeed.
No, I'm not getting rid of Tomlin.
Okay. Ken, I know you spoke on it a little earlier. Like I said, man, 8 playoff appearances, 2 Super Bowl appearances, 1 title in 11 seasons as a head coach. Anything else you want to add to this growing undertone from fans and minority owners to possibly replace Mike Tomlin?
Yeah. So here's the thing. Tomlin, I think Tomlin is the most criticized coach in the NFL for whatever reason. I got a feeling, but outside of the Steelers, you know, being an extremely popular team, and they probably do good in terms of clicks and ratings and views and stuff like that. He's black. I'm just going to put it out there. And, you know, for me, I do think when I look back on a team that went 13-3, they're always nitpicking. They're finding certain things about this team. Is there some things that I would like to see him change in terms of the culture that they built there? Yeah, but for selfish reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because I just want to see people stop criticizing the guy. But I firmly believe that they'll find something else to criticize him for, even if they follow the Patriot way. The Patriots are not the only team that don't say things like the Steelers say. The Eagles haven't really said a lot of things. The Vikings haven't really said a lot of questionable things. You know, a lot of people implore the so-called Patriots way. So I don't think we should continuously give the Patriots credit for not doing the things that the Steelers do because they're the Patriots. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of teams that don't do those sort of things. While people are criticizing Tomlin for the field goal kick, myself, for the onside kick, myself included, Bill Belichick has made a lot of questionable calls that cost them games. And he was criticized for them as well. But people are saying that the Patriots don't do that. They don't beat themselves. Yeah, they have. Let's not have revisionist history. Here, that they have. But more importantly,
five Super
man.
Bowls, though. Five Super Bowls.
I understand that. Five Super Bowls, two gifts. We won the last two because of other people's mistakes.
Somebody got to win, somebody got to lose, Ken.
Valid. And I can't take him away. He got them. He got five Super Bowls. You know, Tomlin's just four away. but he got one too. And but the point is he's made mistakes too, Ralph. And you know, the equity you talked about, maybe he's built that up, but let's not forget he has made those mistakes. He was criticized for them. You know, I'm not saying that he hasn't, but I guess my point is that he's not mistake free. Belichick makes errors too. And people seem to act like he doesn't. But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Ken,
yeah.
But if we're talking about equity, five Super Bowls get you all time equity. Like, you can miss the playoffs for the next 3 years. Like, don't worry about it. It's all good. I have five Super Bowls because of you. Tomlin has one, which built up some equity, right? How many times has he had a team that underachieved? Right? How many times do we say that about Belichick's team? They always overachieve. So you can make mistakes. That you're human. I get it. Sometimes you have to take risks. You have to take calculated risks. You know, sometimes you have to be conservative. I get it. But at the end of the day, look at the dynamics of the team, right? Yes, you're going to make mistakes, but Bill Belichick's team, he takes no-name guys and makes them into stars, right? Like everybody overachieves. Tom Brady was a seventh-round draft pick. Ben Roethlisberger was a first-round top 10 pick, right? Look at the differences. That's the reason why Belichick gets the pass he gets. He has the most equity built up ever. Doesn't matter. But with Tomlin, yeah, he has some built up. But hey, bro, like hey.
No, I hear you, and I understand your point. But when you say underachieve, what's underachieving? Not winning the Super Bowl?
Well, at least getting to it. Realistically. In the AFC, what should have been the AFC championship game? Should have been Pittsburgh and New England.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. All year, that should have been the matchup. That's underachieving. They underachieved this year.
And keep in mind, Pittsburgh really had a legitimate shot at hosting the AFC championship game if they took care of business and didn't blow the lead against New England a couple of weeks ago.
Throughout the season, yeah, they were 13-3, but did they really feel and look like a 13-3 team throughout the season? They had a lot of bad times.
Yeah. I think I remember a game against the Colts, like they barely beat the Colts.
Well, yeah, all of those are valid, but, you know, the record is the record, right?
Hey, you know, Ken, I get your point, man. I have some of my best friends, man. Shout out to the Cypher. Diehard Steelers fans, they want Tomlin gone. Wow. I think one thing I try to tell them is like, you have to kind of, we look at our coaches and our teams from a fan's perspective when we're fans, but sometimes you have to just step outside of your fandom and look at it from a practical standpoint. I just gave you the numbers. You know what I'm saying? I mean, 8 playoff appearances in 11 seasons. I mean, there are not a lot of coaches that are doing that. You know, you got a guy like Marvin Lewis, who's been in Cincinnati, you know, he's what, the second longest tenured head coach behind Belichick in the league. And, you know, he hasn't won a playoff game and he's getting, you know, contract extensions and new contracts. I mean, like he's, all of this stuff is happening. So I think I agree with FIFO. I think Tomlin isn't without criticism because he clearly got outcoached, I think, this past Sunday. Doug Marrone outcoached him, and I think Tomlin made some critical mistakes. That decision not to – and his explanation for why he kicked the onside kick was that basically defensively we weren't stopping them. Okay, I get that part of it, but so you don't get the onside kick, And you, instead of making them go 80 yards, they only got to go 10 to kick a field goal. You know what I'm saying? They got a first down and they were in field goal range. So that just doesn't make any sense. I think sometimes, and it goes back to your point, Ken, that you made earlier about, you know, Dan Quinn and Pete Carroll and the fiasco that happened in Seattle. I think sometimes these NFL coaches outthink themselves. And I think that's one thing Tom did. I don't think that he should be fired, but I think, you know, the Steelers as an organization and the fans, you know, they have a right to kind of hold him to the fire to say, hey, man, look, it's time to tighten up. Because, you know, at this point, you know, the window's closing. Ben has already said that he's coming back. You've got the best receiver in the game. You've got the best running back in the game. You've got to draft somebody on defense because you can't give up 45 points at home. I don't care who you are. You give up 45 points at home in the playoffs, you don't deserve to win. So, you know, so the Steelers' window to win another title under Tomlin as constructed right now, they're going to have to do some tweaking. But, you know, I think and I wouldn't be opposed to them maybe changing offensive coordinators if, you know, if there's not a level of comfort between Ben and Todd Haley. And there clearly doesn't seem to be. I mean, he threw Big Ben through Haley and Mike Tomlin up under the bus in his postgame press conference. But that's neither here nor there. So we'll see how it plays out. Like FIFO said, I get why fans are upset. I get why these minority owners are upset. But I don't think firing Tomlin is the answer. I just don't.
Yeah, and I don't either. The man has never had a losing season as a Pittsburgh coach. He's finished 500, but he hasn't had a losing season. He did that twice. I think that, you know, fans are emotional, and exactly. I understand. But I did some research. I just needed to a history lesson, a refresher. Bill Cowher went through the same thing. Fans were calling for him to be fired. I think he missed the postseason three straight years in the 90s. One of the criticisms of Bill Cowher was that, you know, he didn't always have his teams ready to play in postseason games. He never made adjustments in the face of adversity, was outcoached in the playoffs, and could never, ever win the big game. You know, those were things that people were saying about him. They were saying that he was bad at clock management. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, I think one of his teams went 11-5, and that team didn't feel right because they had to come down for two or three scores to win games. And then at some point, and then, you know, after all of that, you know, there was the Jerome Bettis head sale Thanksgiving game, and then they lost 18 of their next 24 from the late 90s to the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. So for myself, I wanted to make sure that, you know, am I too caught up in Tomlin being black? And to a certain degree, yes, I am. I'm sensitive to it because I've seen what a good job he's done. So
and that's
I had
understood.
To go back. Yeah, and so I just had to go back and say, what were people saying about Bill Cowher back in the day? And he faced the same amount of criticism. But we know that the Rooneys typically don't fire coaches. They either retire or they leave and then they find a replacement. This is par for the course with Pittsburgh. And, you know, it is what it is, and I guess people do expect more out of them. But Bill Cowher had three losing seasons, I think.
They wanted to get rid of. I remember those years. Those were the slash years we had Cordell Stewart and, you know.
and they questioned him. They thought he was gay, and they questioned his sexuality. Bill Cowher won one Super Bowl, and that was in, 2005? It was a topic. But –
I always thought he was. I mean, not that it matters.
I don't know if he is or not, but I don't know. It doesn't even matter. But that was something that they had to deal with. But, you know, Bill Cowher won that one Super Bowl a year before he retired. He went 8-8 and then he stepped out. So, you know, but he's a legend now.
Yeah, oh,
he's
no a question. Coaching legend. No question.
Same thing could happen to Tomlin.
Exactly. So we'll see how that plays out. Man, before we move on to the NBA, man, it's time for our predictions. Of course, we got a championship. It's going to be hard to top the drama that we just saw this past weekend in three of the four games, man. So we got Jacksonville going to New England. That's the early game on Sunday. And then we got Minnesota visiting the city of brotherly love. That will be the late game on Sunday. So, B, who you got, man? Jacksonville, New England, and Minnesota versus Philly. Who you got?
I got Minnesota, Philly. I got. I'm gonna go with Brotherly Love against Jacksonville. Gotta go with Jacksonville.
Okay.
Okay. I'm with Sassy Ramsey, man. We're gonna win this game, and we're gonna win a Super Bowl in this bitch.
he said that too,
man, in a live microphone. I'm quoting him verbatim when I said that. So just off of that, I'm going with Jacksonville, man. I think one thing that you do not want to give teams, you know, because they already know they're going in underdog, is confidence. You know, they didn't won a wild card game, an ugly game against Buffalo. You know, beat the Pittsburgh Steelers where everybody had them counted out. You're going to go into this high power offense and Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, Big Ben, blase, and they go out there and they ball out and they win. So now they got confidence. Now they feel like they can beat anyone. That's the worst thing you want to do to teams is give them confidence, whether it's football, basketball, soccer, baseball, whatever. So I think right now Jacksonville, they're playing with house money at this point. People didn't even think they were going to get this far. So the fact that they're playing in the AFC Championship game, they just like, look, we about to go all out and we about to try to win this. And I think with that confidence, now it's going to be tough to go up in Gillette Stadium and do that. We talking about going up to Gillette Stadium. It's not like they're playing at home, but I don't know, man. I think Jacksonville might pull out an upset. I predicted them to beat. I predicted them to beat Pittsburgh when we did our picks last week. I had Jacksonville putting off the upset. And I think they're going to continue going again, man. I think this is not going to be no Cinderella where it's going to be a bad end. I think they might pull it off. And I think Minnesota and Philly, I think it's just going to be an ugly grind out. You know, I would be surprised if both of these teams hit 20 points. I think it's going to be a 14 or 17 type of game, man. I think it's going to be very, very defensive. It's going to be outdoors, so Minnesota got, you know, you're not going to have the luxury of playing in a dome. So, but that would be crazy if Minnesota win that game. But I'm just rooting for Philadelphia just because, you know, I kind of always, even during the McNabb years, I always liked Philadelphia, man. I always liked this team, the squads that they had, Dawkins and all them. And I just like these guys really playing, they're having fun. They really like about each other, you know what I'm saying? So, I'm just for that, I'm just going with Philly, you know. And then also a part of me is like, the hell with Vikings, because if Vikings put us off the Super Bowl, we'll be the only team in NFC North without a Super Bowl. So misery love company, damn it. I want Minnesota to still be Super Bowlist, you know, just like my Lions, man. So that's another reason why I'm rooting for Philly. So I want Philly to get it, and I want Jacksonville. Then at that point, we have two teams that have never won a Super Bowl in their franchise history playing for the Super Bowl. I think that'd be dope.
No doubt. What about you, Ken? You got the AFC, man. You got New England and Jacksonville battling it out, and in the NFC, you got Philly and Minnesota, man. Who you like and why?
Philly, Minnesota. Wow. So Prince or TSOP, The Roots, Jill Scott. the list goes on and on, man.
Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince.
Hey,
Schoolie D.
They had it all going, man, this weekend. All of that got some love.
Shout out to Schoolie D.
I'm going with the blackest city out of the two. Now, Cal, I've never been to Minnesota. You stayed in Minnesota. So,
hey, man, Minnesota. Well, you know what, Ken? To be honest, when you see a brown face in Minnesota, it's usually someone from Africa or Ethiopia, to be honest.
Okay.
The traditional brothers, ain't a lot of us up there.
So
I mean, it is, but it ain't.
All right,
but it's cool. Well, but everybody gotcha. Gets along though. It's cool.
Real I love Minnesota, shit. Man. Y'all, they Prince, man. That like they, you know, like they won with that.
Yeah, and they play "Let's Go Crazy" after every touchdown too.
Yeah, so they gave us Prince. I'll always have love for Minnesota, but I'm going with Philly, man. I saw, like I said, I saw both defenses for the first time this weekend. And that Philly defense, man, they get after you, man. And I think it's a little bit more legit than Minnesota, but I think they're ranked 1 and 2. Philly is ranked number one. I think in the NFC. But either way it go, man, both of them play solid defense. It's going to be an ugly game. We're talking about Foles versus Keenum. Let that sink in your head for a minute. Foles versus Keenum. And if you look at QB play, who's going to make the mistake first? it's really a toss-up. We know Foles can implode at any time. That roller coaster, man, is real. But I think Peterson will make sure that that doesn't happen. But yeah, I'm going with the Eagles, man. I'm going with the Black City, man. I love Philly. I went there for my anniversary, man. I enjoyed the city. They got Philly cheesesteaks. They got a lot of stuff I love, man. So I'm going for Philly, man. I think they deserve it. So does Minnesota as well. And Mike Zimmer deserves a lot of credit, man. He lost two starting quarterbacks, and this fool's in the NFC Championship game. Unfreaking real, man.
No doubt.
In the Jacksonville Patriots game, I hate that Sassy Ramsey said what he said. I understand the brother caught up, and he was excited, and that he's confident. But sometimes you can be overconfident as the Steelers. And for him to jump ahead, like people are criticizing the Steelers for, to saying you're going to not only go to the Super Bowl, but you're going to win it, and you've never been in this position before, speaks to their level of inexperience, but also speaks to their confidence. We're talking about Jalen Ramsey, who's played in games that matter out of Florida State. Tom Brady has traditionally struggled with great defensive team. Denver got at him. The Ravens got at him. Is this defense on the level of the Ravens defense? I don't know. You don't want to give Brady bulletin board material.
Right.
Pittsburgh, I cannot overlook the fact that Pittsburgh put up 42 points on them boys. And they have Blake Bortles as the quarterback. So for me, I'm going to roll with the Jacksonville Jaguars, baby. Sam C. Ramsey and is gonna take care of business, man. Ain't no way in hell I'm picking the Patriots to win this game. I'll never pick the Patriots.
I think
they messed up. I think Sassy Ramsey messed up, though.
Oh, no question. FIFA, what about you, man? Who you got this weekend?
Man, look. As much as I say you can't trust Georgia teams, it's as much as I hate Tom Brady and them damn Patriots, man. So I'm definitely going with Jacksonville. I'm going with the underdog. I'm going with the upset. I think B and Ken are right on it. It's not always kind of what's apparent. It's kind of what you know in terms of, you know, being a former athlete and being on a team and understanding momentum. Jacksonville's riding the high. And, you know, we know defense win championships. Them boys play defense and they can run the ball. When you can do those two things, guess what? It keeps the ball out of number 12's hands. I think that's the game plan. I don't think that you need to, you know, try to recreate what they did against Pittsburgh in terms of scoring 40-some-odd points. They don't want to get in that type of shootout. With all that being said, I'm going to take Jacksonville with the big-time upset at Foxborough.
Okay.
In terms of the... Who is it? Philly and
Minnesota.
And Minnesota. Okay, this right here. Obviously, Philly, I think, is the overall more talented team. Obviously, they don't have their starting quarterback, and neither does Minnesota. So, I have to go kind of with the logic of Ken, and I'll agree with him. Philly has a lot of stuff I like that I love. Philly cheesesteak being definitely at the top of the list because I'm a fat boy. So I'm going to go with Philly, man. I'm going to go with Philly winning.
Okay. I didn't like you said, Sassy Ramsey's comments as far as what they wanted to do, you know, with him predicting, you know, that they're going to go all of the way or whatever like that. I didn't like his comments. But I understand. I get it. You're a young guy. You can get caught up in it. And I will say this much. I could never find myself, you know, rooting or picking for, you know, the Tom Brady led New England Patriots. I will say this much. I think the thing that you need to do to beat Brady and the Patriots is, one, you got to have a great pass rush, and you got to be able to put pressure on Brady without bringing other people. So you got it. Your front four have to get pressure, and you have to get pressure in the middle. Jacksonville does this very well. If I'm not mistaken, they led the league in sacks. So, and the second thing you have to do is you have to have corners that can cover. We know Bouye and Sassy Ramsey, both are all pro, can cover. So you got that covered. And then you got to be able to put up points. That's the problem that Jacksonville is going to have. But they put up 45 points this past weekend. So I think defensively, if they can get it done, if Blake Bortles can make six plays, Blake, I know you're listening. If you can make six plays, y'all got this. So, yeah, I'm going with Jacksonville. I think it'll be a close game. I think, you know, but I will say this much. If the four of us are wrong, it'll be because Roger Goodell has made the phone call already to the refs to make sure that ain't no way in hell that the Jacksonville Jaguars make it to Minneapolis. Because trust me, they can't sell the Jacksonville Jaguars in the Super Bowl as well as they can sell Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. So Right. Trust and believe that when we look at the stat sheet come Monday morning, Jacksonville is going to have like 15 penalties. New England might have seven, or they might have three. So they're not going to win the flag battle. I can tell you that already. The call has been made. Over in the NFC, man, I think both teams really kind of evenly match up. I think both teams have great, great defenses. Both teams run the ball. I'm pretty sure it's going to be cold. So, you know, that's all you want to do is run the ball. You don't want to have to throw. I think it's really going to come down to field goals and turnovers. Who can make their field goals? Who won't turn the ball over? I like Keenum more so than I like Nick Foles, even though Nick Foles did play well against the Falcons defense. So, yeah, man, I got to go with Minnesota, man. I know everybody that's going to be at the Loop on Sunday watching the game. One of the best restaurants in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, man. Love the food. I used to eat that all the time. So yeah, I'm going with Minnesota winning. I probably say 27-24. And in the Patriots game, I'm going to go 17-14 Jaguars. So that's the way I see it going down. Before we get out of here, man, let's go to the NBA. What can we say about, you know, what's going on in the NBA? Man, the Cleveland Cavaliers, to say that they are struggling is an understatement. You know what's been going on with this team. The Cavs have lost four in a row, eight of their last 10. Right now they're the number three seed, and they're four and a half games ahead of the ninth seed, and seven and a half game back of the Boston Celtics, who lead the East. Now, obviously, with the number three seed, they're only going to guarantee themselves one playoff series with a home court advantage. Of course, we got a lot of time before that happens. But just over the last week or so, man, they blew a 22-point lead at Indiana. They lost by 34 to Toronto in a game in which they were down by 41 points at one point. They had a 28-point loss to the Timberwolves, and then obviously last night at the time of this recording, losing to Golden State by 10 at home. Man, what can I say about this team? The defense has yielded 120 points a game over the last five games. Defensively, they're ranked 29th in the league. We know that they have issues. Isaiah Thomas is just getting back into shape. Right now, he's shooting 35% from the field. In his last three games, he's only made 13 of 47 shots. That being said, FIFO, what's wrong with Cleveland?
Oh, man. It's not the same old squad. Kyrie saw the writing on the wall. He made his move. Cleveland is in one of these situations that I feel the writing's on the wall, and ownership and management will not pull the trigger. Mm. At this point in time, right? What were they lost? Like 8 out of 10? You know,
yeah,
they,
8 out of 10. Four in a row, 8 out of 10. And I think they play again Thursday against Orlando.
They better not lose to Orlando. There's going to be wholesale changes after that. Especially if I was the GM, they're gonna have to make some moves, and because LeBron has not committed long term, that leaves the entire state of the franchise up in the air. And if your entire franchise is predicated on one person, then you really have not built a true foundation. And what better time than now, especially when you already know you're going to be guaranteed a pretty high draft pick, maybe not number one overall, but you're going to have at least a top five, top 10 pick in this upcoming draft, which is loaded again. You got to start making moves. You have a lot of valuable assets that other teams would want, mainly because your talent is still under contract. So I would make moves. You got to make moves. It seems like this is just, it's too dysfunctional. You see how LeBron's antics on the sideline looks like he's the coach. It don't look right. It don't feel right. And when those two things happen, you kind of have to move on. You know, J.R. Smith, I know the past couple games he hasn't scored. That's a starting shooting guard, man. How do you not score? You are a starter, and you're known for scoring. How do you get 0 points? I can't pinpoint exactly. Like, oh yeah, it's this one thing. No, I think it's a multitude of things. So at this point, I just believe that you have to make wholesale changes. I take on bad contracts. I take on draft picks. I take on all of that. And LeBron is basically going to be begging me for me to trade him because I got to get something for him too. Unless he wants to play with a whole bunch of bums and G Leaguers, I got to get something for LeBron. And I think that's where Cleveland needs to truly consider. That's really where they are. Because the reality of the situation is, if you do make it to the finals, and I did say it because I truly believe Boston is going to make it out this year. But if they make the finals, what's going to happen? Like, we know what's going to happen. Golden State is going to beat their ass big time. So why endure that? Why endure that when you know you can't beat the juggernaut when you have the king? So you got to get rid of the castle, man. You got to form new alliances. You got to build a new foundation, and that's where Cleveland is, unfortunately. And obviously they're not going to do that. No professional sports team would do that with the best player on the planet on your team. But I think that that's a bold move and something that needs to be taken into consideration, because if they make a move for DeAndre Jordan, that doesn't put him over the top. Mm-hmm. I was thinking Anthony Davis and maybe a DeMarcus Cousins, or DeMarcus Cousins, I mean, put you over the top of Golden State. And that's really not, you know, obviously they haven't been playing defense. They don't have no rim protection, but their problem is all defense. And especially perimeter defense, especially when you have a guy that's 5'9" and was the worst rated defensive player last year. Mm. Obviously, he ain't helping much. So I just rather scrap the project and start all over.
Bold moves from FIFO, man. B, what about you, man? I read the numbers, man. 8 out of the last 10 since Christmas losses for the Cavs. Like I said, their last 4, I mean, you have a game where you, at one point, you're down by 41 points. What's wrong with the Cavs, man?
They can't play no damn defense. you cannot be committed on the defense of being playing against a team like Golden State. Because if they meet Golden State in the finals again, which I'm still not giving up hope on Cleveland coming out the East, not just yet. But they just not playing no defense, man. And if you go out there like a daisy defensively, you're gonna get swept. They're gonna get swept this year if they end up facing the they will end up facing the Golden State. Because like I said earlier, I tweeted earlier, you might as well just get Golden State in the championship. Nobody's gonna beat them in a 7-game series. If they go against them this time, even with supposedly people say this is the deepest bench LeBron has right now, they're going to get swept out the water, I think, this time. Because, Isaiah Thomas is good, but you know, he's no Kyrie Irving, you know. He is definitely no Kyrie Irving. But, yeah, man, that's the main thing with Cleveland. They're not playing any defense. You have to play good team defense to even be considered or somewhat considered a championship squad, man. I mean, as offensive Golden State is, they got guys that's committed on defensive end. Hell, even Kevin Durant is starting to be committed on defense, and that's scary. Like, right. He's starting to get that he's scary on the defensive end. So when you get that, along with, you know, Andre Iguodala, Livingston, Draymond Green, like you already got guys that's a dog on defense anyway. I mean, even Klay Thompson, he has his spurs where he played, where he's showing up on defensively. But yeah, once you start getting guys that come in on defense like that and can still score and get buckets that quick, dangerous team. That's why they champs. And I don't think Cleveland have that same dog in them. I thought they did when they got Joe Crowder from Boston. You know, I thought they got him and Jeff Green, you know, a couple of good wing guys that can defend multiple four positions or three positions or more. But they just think, you know, I'm hearing rumors they say Crowder's unhappy. You know what I'm saying? In Cleveland. So it's a mess, man. It's a mess. I agree with people we was texting earlier. You know, just go ahead and go to San Antonio. Go over there with legendary Greg Pop.
Mm. So B is proposing that LeBron goes to San Antonio. I ain't mad at it. Ken, what about you, man? We talk via text, man. It's been a topic of discussion. Obviously, the discussion talks have heated up even more so within the last 24 hours as we just saw Cleveland, you know, basically just kind of get run out of the gym in the fourth quarter in their own building. What's wrong with the Cavs, man?
Everything. I'll add to what Ralph and – I mean – I'll add to what FIFO and B just said, man. I think the rotations. I think Ty Lue is the problem. I think he has too many pieces, and he doesn't know quite what to do with them. They were fine until Tristan Thompson came back. Tristan Thompson came back. They tried to work him in. Things kind of – they had a bump in the road. And now IT is back, and the bump is – speed bump has gotten a lot bigger. And they just have a lot of pieces, man. J.R. Smith whining about not starting. He got to go. Shumpert's hurt, but he got to go because he makes way too many boneheaded plays. Crowder doesn't want to be there. He's playing like 21 minutes or so a game, and you could just look at him on the court. It's like he forgot how to play. It's like he forgot how to play basketball. He is not the same guy that we saw in Boston last year and the years before then. His energy is not there. He puts forth no effort, and you know he just doesn't look happy. I think Jeff Green, when they were successful, Jeff Green was playing really, really well, but they bringing him off. Well, I think he's always came off the bench, but. He's back to being the inconsistent Jeff Green that we've always known. And he's not having an impact, you know, anymore. And I just think the rotations are all over the place. Ty Lue hasn't figured it out. Stephen A. Smith reported that role players are going up to management and complaining about their roles, and they don't know, you know, and their playing time, and it's all kind of mess, man. It's time to move some pieces. I would not trade that number one pick. I wouldn't. I would keep that because LeBron hasn't committed, and I need to look towards the future for my organization. He gave us one. I'm happy, but you're not about to cripple me again. But I think there are some other moves that they can make to improve this roster. This is a case where they just have too many pieces. This is a nightmare. And I'm with FIFO. I don't see them getting out of the East right now. Because until Tyronn Lue, when I watch this team play, I don't understand, especially when I watch that Warriors game, they are so inconsistent on both ends of the court. It's baffling to me. When I watch Golden State play or San Antonio play or Boston play, everybody knows what they're going to do, when they're going to do it, their roles. They don't try to do too much. They really play as one unit. This is a situation where I think having the best player on your team is detrimental to the team because they tend to rely on him way too much. There are far too many times when we look up and LeBron is having to be or is the best player on the court against the Warriors. He was. He had like 16 in the first quarter, I think, or something like that. Nobody else was involved. When the Cavs won 18-19, they were moving. The bench was playing well. Everybody was functioning as one unit. They were in sequence. They were sharing the ball. A lot of that has dissipated. And it's back to LeBron or bust. And I don't really think LeBron wants to play that way. I think he would love to play the way that Golden State would play or the way that San Antonio plays, and not the way that they're playing now. They have enough weapons, but they need a right system. And they need a right coach to get them heading in the right direction. And we've been on this Lou train for a while. We tried to fire him last year. You know, they got it right. But they went 23-23, remember? When they started out 5-7, we ratcheted that thing back up. Fire Lou. It's back on again. And they got Blatt up out of there. And we really have to look at Lou now because you have pieces. We all know that if you don't get along with your teammates and there's dysfunction, you're not going to go that far. And we have a long way to go, but I feel like this isn't the end of the story. And I think we're just beginning. And whatever went on between LeBron and Kyrie, we will find out their personal issues and why Kyrie left. At some point, it's going to leak out.
Of course.
But this is a nightmare, man. And I think LeBron is playing well, but I think we're starting to see the end of the King's reign in the East.
Wow. Man, all three of you made some excellent points, man. I really can't go too much against anything anybody said, to be honest. I think B touched on it. He said, you know, the part about them not playing defense. And I think sometimes you have to want to play defense. And I just don't see it consistently on a consistent basis. And I'm going to give you a point of reference. There was a moment last night in the game, and many of you, I'm assuming, you know, listening to this podcast, saw it, where Kevin Durant gets a steal and he's on the break. LeBron beats him to the spot as far as in the paint. And you can tell that Kevin Durant is gearing up, like he's not going to lay the ball in. Kevin Durant, probably once he gets beyond the 3-point line, he's starting to lock in. If you look at the play in slow motion, he's starting to lock in on the rim. So that tells me, and he's kind of gathering his steps, so that tells me that he's going to dunk the ball. And LeBron is in the lane, and LeBron clearly has, you know, the wherewithal and the ability to jump with Kevin Durant. But instead, he lets Kevin Durant take off from the dots, and he dunks it in his face. And I mean, LeBron doesn't jump, but he still, there's going to be a poster with LeBron in that poster with Kevin Durant dunking. And when I saw that, I was like, well, that's part of the problem right there. Like, you're the lead. And I don't get me wrong, I'm not here to necessarily dump on LeBron, but when you're the leader, you have to take the responsibility on the defensive end. You can't say, well, hey, we're not playing defense, and you're part of the reason why we're not playing defense. I saw a play last night where Steph Curry, of all people, came through the lane and threw down a two-handed dunk. I don't think I've seen Steph Curry dunk in the NBA, but like maybe two or three times, right? So their lack of ability to play defense, I think, is more so is their desire to play defense. Like, they don't even try. And I understand, yeah, Golden State moves the ball, and they make even the most defensive teams look crazy because Golden State is always making the extra pass. They don't care about who scores. Their thing is, let's get our shots and let's get them all on assisted baskets. They lead the league in assists. So, you know, they're going to get the best shot. They're going to keep passing the ball around until they get the best shot. Rarely do you have guys on Golden State just come down ISO, jack up a three. That rarely happens. And I mean, if it does, you know, it's Kevin or it's Steph, and nobody's going to say anything. But I won't go as far as FIFO and Ken in saying that it's over for them in the East, because I still think we just saw this Cavs team prior to Isaiah Thomas coming back we saw them win, what, 13 in a row. I mean, they can do it. I think, you know, they're going to kind of figure some things out on the back half of the season. But the problem is this team doesn't look as good as they did last year. And when you look at who they could possibly face in the finals, provided they get to the finals, Golden State looks twice as good as they did last year. And like, even in watching the game last night, it just, at least to me, it didn't appear like at any time that they felt threatened by what Cleveland was doing. You know, Cleveland went up by 9 and Golden State erased it. They went on like a 12-0 run. I mean, like, Golden State comes at you in waves. And while I agree with Ken where they probably should be looking to make a trade, I just don't know if there are any trades out there that can make them that much better where they can beat, you know, Golden State. I don't think, you know, like B said, I think right now as it stands, they're getting swept. And now it's a lot of stuff that has to happen between now and then, and you got injuries and a whole nine. But if they had to play Golden State in the 7-game series tomorrow, I think they get swept. Luckily for them, June is far away, and a lot can happen. But I don't know, man. This, like Ken said, this could be the end of their run. I'm not going to go as far as saying that I don't think that Boston can beat them in a 7-game series because I still believe in LeBron. I still think LeBron's the best player in the game. But, you know, when it goes back to what I started off talking about, defense, man, you got to want to try to do it. You got to try to do it. And I don't see the defensive effort. I don't see it. And I see a guy like J.R. Smith, and I tweeted it out last night. Somebody needs to remind J.R. Smith that he can get to the rim. This guy just shoots threes all the time. Remind J.R. Smith that a couple of dribbles, he can get to the rim and take his guy off the dribble most nights. You know, Isaiah Thomas is back in the mix, and Kevin Love's numbers are starting to fall off. And it's because, you know, Kevin Love at times couldn't figure out how he could coexist with Kyrie on the court, Kyrie and LeBron, and we saw his numbers dip. And I think we're starting to see the same thing. Isaiah Thomas, I think last night took 21. He took more shots than LeBron did last night. You know, so this team, man, and it's going to take a little time for Isaiah Thomas to round himself into shape. I'm thinking maybe a little bit after the All-Star break, he should be good to go. I won't throw dirt on the Cleveland Cavaliers' grave just yet, but I think they can still come out of the East, but against Golden State, phew. I don't know, man. This team looks scary. They look that much better than they did last year. So we'll see, man. And you know, the trade deadline, and we're hearing rumors that, you know, Cleveland is looking to make a move. And like Ken said, there are rumblings about guys who aren't, you know, necessarily happy. Jay Crowder does not appear to be very happy with his role. And his minutes are being reduced, and he's not getting the shots getting in Boston. So it's a lot of moving parts, man. And then we got D. Rose, that whole situation. D. Rose is, you know, should be coming back probably within the next month and a half or so. And they're going to have to try to work him into the rotation. Or maybe he doesn't get in the rotation. I don't know. It's a lot of moving pieces, man. And like Ken said, and I hate to admit it, but you got to start looking at Ty Lue. You know, got to start looking at Ty Lue. I know LeBron and those guys would never throw him under the bus, but, and, you know, he doesn't need to be fired or anything like that. But, you know, for Ty Lue, a guy who is supposed to be a defensive coach, you know, your team is damn near last in defensive efficiency. You know, that speaks volumes. That speaks volumes about where they are. So we'll see how it goes. It's almost time for us to get out of here. As I mentioned at the top, make sure that you download, subscribe to the podcast, wherever podcasts are given away. It's time for our final thoughts. My man FIFO's up first. FIFO, what's your final thought?
My final thought is this. LeBron James, you about to be a free agent. Please go play for Popovich. I know you want to. That's why you're trying to hold out and one more Olympics just so you can get the tutelage. How about that's everyday life? How about you just leave Cleveland, go to warmer pastures down there in San Antonio? You know, you ain't got no state tax over there either. I'm pretty sure it's pretty nice. Dallas is nice, so I'm pretty sure San Antonio is pretty nice. And just play for Pop. I don't see anywhere else where he could really play. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense in New York. It doesn't make any sense in L.A. It makes sense for Popovich. and Kawhi Leonard, and arguably the best duo to ever play the game if he goes there. So I'm going to just leave it there.
True indeed. True indeed. B, what's your final thought?
Final thought. Michigan State Spartans, what's going on? Y'all seem to be in the funk right now ever since this Big Ten conference started. You got blown out by unranked Ohio State, and you got your butts kicked by University of Michigan. Wolverines, man. What's going on, Spartans? I know Izzo usually turns it up, you know, in late February going into March, but, man, I don't know what's going on with my Spartans. I hope they need to get together. They need to get together soon. And also too excited that the Aussie Open is started up. Like I said, I'm an admitted fan. I'm a tennis fan, but I only watch tennis whenever the Grand Slams is going on. Mm-hmm. Aussie Open, French Open, Wimbledon, and U.S. Open. So, but good to see tennis season is in full effect. Usually when Aussie Open starts up, that means tennis season starting up. So we not gonna get Serena this go round, but I think we're gonna get her definitely for the French Open.
True, true, true indeed. Ken, what about you, man? What's your final thought?
You have a superstar player. His team is up 6 points with 44 seconds left in regulation. He turns the ball over. The other team scores with a rebound and a dunk. They get the ball back. There are two missed free throws. And then there's a wide open three. Who was this superstar's guy? He was covering him, and he gave up the wide open three. They went on into OT, and they lost the game. This superstar player put up 64 points, had 6 rebounds, and only 1 assist with 5 steals. And he lost to a rookie. Who is that guy?
Is that Kobe?
That is Michael Jordan.
Oh, wow. Did not know that.
January 16, 1993. He scored 64 points on 49 field goals. Shaq had 29 and 24.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that something?
Okay. Can you come through with a history?
What would happen? Because we have this, I call it the Michael Jordanification of who he is. Oh, Michael Jordan would never lose a game up by 6 with 44 seconds to go. Michael Jordan would never lose his man and allow his man to get a wide open three. Michael Jordan wouldn't have a late game turnover.
Michael Jordan wouldn't miss a last shot.
yeah, he kind of did. And, but, you know, revisionist history, man. Sometimes we forget, man. And you know, Michael Jordan is God, and it's understandable so. But Michael Jordan was also human. And while he put up the points, he didn't care about that. He said it was a waste of energy. You know, he only cared about the loss. And he said that, you know, it's just we just got to make sure that we make sure it doesn't happen again. And, you know, that's that. So I'll end it by saying that to put that 49 field goals into perspective, Kobe scored 81 on 46 field goal attempts.
I knew Kobe would come in at some point. My final thought, man, the regular season for the NFL just ended. As we see these playoff games are hot and heavy, and we're seeing these seasons, you know, be extended, or end, if you will. But I think one of the things that we as fans have to keep in mind is that, for a lot of players, in fact, I'd probably say for about 95% of the players in the NFL, when it's over, it's over. Most NFL players do not do like John Elway and they call a press conference and they officially retire. You know how you officially retire in the NFL? Your phone stops ringing. So while these games are going on, keep in mind that there's some men who are going to play in these games and it's going to be the last time that they play ever again, because maybe they're a little older Maybe the young guy that that got drafted to their position is going to come in and take their place. It's a young man's game. So keep in mind that when you see players, you know, distraught and tired and very sad after these games, you know, some are sad because that might be their last game at that particular team with that particular team, and they may be moving on to another team, or just a matter of fact, that just might be their last game, period. That's going to do it for us, for man FIFO, B, and Ken. I'm your man, 12 Kyle. We'll catch you guys. Peace.